welcome to International Edition. I'm Susan Yawkey in Washington. Ahead, an exclusive VOA interview with the U.S. Secretary of State.
I hope that we will succeed in persuading people why this agreement actually prevents conflict, provides for security for the region, and will prevent the acquisition of a nuclear weapon.
We'll hear what's new on social media, how oil and gold are doing in the marketplace, and a singer that mixes emotional lyrics with a voice that echoes Amy Winehouse. It's ahead on The Voice of America. The Persian News Network's Sattar Darwish on Monday conducted an interview with U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry at the State Department. It focuses on a major issue the Obama administration is pushing for at this time, the Iran nuclear deal. Here is their conversation.
Mr. Secretary, thank you very much for talking to the Voice of America Persian.
Delighted. Thank you.
If I may, I would like to start with the UN Security Council today. There was a vote and they passed a resolution on the Iran nuclear deal. Does this vote mean that Iran has stopped being a pariah state in the eyes of the international community?
Well, what the vote means is that people are hopeful that the transformation is going to take place over the course of the next months and years. They're voting for the agreement. They're voting to support what Iran and six other nations agreed on in Vienna. And I think it's an expression of confidence in that agreement, and it's an expression of hope for the future, for Iran, for the rest of the world. Obviously, that agreement is based on the hope that the nuclear problem will be resolved, that Iran will become a nation in good standing with the rest of the international community. But it's going to be proven not by a vote and not by the words. It's going to be proven by the actions over the course of the next implementation of the agreement.
Mr. Secretary, you mentioned that there will be some transformation. When the deal was announced last week, inside Iran, people came out to the streets. They poured into the streets. They wanted to show their joy. They were celebrating. Do you think it was too early, considering that the U.S. Congress has to review the deal? And also inside Iran, Iran's Supreme National Security Council has to approve it, and also the Majlis.
Well, no, I don't think it's ever too early for people to express their feelings and to be heard about how they feel about an agreement. Maybe that will have some impact on other people looking at this, and they'll understand how the people of Iran feel about it. So I hope it's a message that's a positive one, but I wouldn't say it's too early. I hope that Congress will see the possibilities of this and that the Supreme Council will see the possibilities.
You negotiated the deal as an exclusively nuclear issue. You did not get into other issues. Yet Iranians have high expectations from this deal, and they are hoping and they're expecting that their economy will change, their lifestyle will change, their everyday life will change. Are you concerned that those people with such high expectations would be disappointed?
No, I think that if the deal goes through and is fully implemented, the people of Iran are going to see an improved standard of living. They'll see sanctions lifted off of them that have prevented commerce, trade, travel, investment, all these other things. So a lot of good things can happen if this deal is fully implemented.
And what would you say to those who are hoping and who are expecting that this deal would help support the people who are for democratic reforms? It doesn't seem that the gates of the Evin prison are going to be opening anytime soon.
Well, this deal, as we said before, if we had chosen any number of issues between Iran and the world community or between the United States and Iran, you know, we'd have been negotiating for 10 years and never gotten anywhere. And we didn't have that kind of time because of the nuclear issue and where the progress was. We needed to negotiate exclusively on nuclear. And as it is, that took 4 years. So it was very complicated, very difficult issue. And I think that obviously the United States of America will never stop believing in democracy and in people's rights, human rights, and always stand for that. But this deal needed to get the nuclear issue off the table because we were threatened with the possibility of a nuclear arms race in the entire region. And nobody benefits from that. So we took a priority, we focused on the priority, we eliminated the potential of conflict over the nuclear weapons, providing it is accepted by Congress, accepted by the Majlis, and implemented. If that happens, I think the world will be a safer place.
You mentioned, sir, that it was complicated, and there are many complex steps that need to be implemented. Now, the process is going to be long, and some people inside Iran are concerned that because of this process, the United States is not going to be too hard on Iran as far as human rights issues are concerned, or the issue of the four Americans who are wrongfully imprisoned.
We will never, ever stop, first of all, raising the issue of the Americans who are held, but also standing up for people's rights. That's who we are in our country. But we also have to deal with other issues simultaneously. I mean, unfortunately, in the world of diplomacy and foreign affairs, you don't have the luxury of just focusing on one issue and saying, this is the most important thing, we're not going to do anything else. You can't ignore what's happening in Syria. You can't ignore what's happening in Iraq, or what's happening in Yemen, or what's happening in Egypt, or in the Sinai, or, you know, all of these issues compound themselves. And so we involved in public life and in diplomacy in today's world have a very complicated mosaic that we're trying to put together, bring the pieces together. It's not easy. And in the end, it will be those issues will be resolved through agreements like the one that we reached with Iran. But we have to fight for it.
Sir, if I may, I want to turn to Congress. You will be on Capitol Hill this week, and
yes,
you will be facing bipartisan skeptics from Congress.
Okay.
They seem to remain unconvinced. What is your battle plan, sir? And are you going to bring anything new, any new arguments, so you can defend the deal?
Well, I'm going to tell the truth about the deal. There are many people who, frankly, some of them had opposed it before they even read it. I mean, many of them admitted they hadn't read the deal when they started opposing it. Some people just opposed the idea of doing a deal with Iran. But I think when people really look at what is gained here, when they see that this is a possibility of actually doing away with a potential of a nuclear weapon, and of perhaps opening up the possibilities of other good things happening, of a new relationship, I think people will see the benefit of it. And obviously, there's a very powerful group of voices who are opposed to it, who spend a lot of money in opposition to it, and that's been heard. But I believe, I'm glad we have the 60 days. I think it will give time for people to really reflect and see that if you don't let this agreement go forward, you could be choosing conflict and war. That could be the alternative, because if we don't have this agreement, then I believe the Ayatollah would say, why should I negotiate with these guys? They haven't delivered. They don't do it. Why would our colleagues in the world support the sanctions when they say the sanctions were supposed to be to get an agreement, but they got one and now they walked away? So the whole thing comes apart with great danger to the region.
Sir, you mentioned the Ayatollah. On Saturday, Iran's Supreme Leader Khamenei stressed that we do not negotiate with the U.S. About different global and regional issues. He said that we do not negotiate about bilateral issues. And he even said that the slogan, Death to America, are still going to be heard in the streets of Tehran. Does this mean that the embassy right here on Massachusetts Avenue will remain closed, that there will not be any U.S.-Iran cultural relations, and that none of the businesses from the United States is going to go to Iran anytime soon? So if I may...
Well, we have to, obviously, we have to explore it. I mean, on its face, it would seem that way. I mean, the statement was pretty negative and pretty dramatic, and, you know, I have no reason to believe otherwise. But I'm an optimist in global affairs. I'm somebody who believes that what you hear today, you may not hear in 2 months or 10 months or whatever. I just don't know. And for the moment, that's not what we're focused on. We're focused on the nuclear deal. And we will do what we have to do to push back against other activities if we think they interfere with the security of our friends or with our security. We will do what we need to do.
My last question, sir, is that we talked about high expectations from inside Iran. When do you think, realistically, that this deal is going to start working? And when do people, do you think that they will see real changes in their lives? Is it going
to be... Well, Congress has 60 days. So September 19th, there should, by then, sometime, there should have been a vote. If that has happened, that becomes the day that the deal begins to kick in. And then after that, there are certain things that Iran needs to do, and the IAEA needs to do, and those things have to be resolved, all of them, before the sanctions begin to be relieved. So you're looking at somewhere about 6 months or so. It's hard to say exactly. It depends what happens. But I don't think there would be much felt before that. But I think September will be the critical moment when people begin to learn whether or not this will be, in fact, implemented.
And does this include medicine? Does it include easier travel for Iranians to the United States?
Well, it includes the potential of travel, but what it includes immediately is the lifting of specific sanctions on finance, on banking, on the movement of goods. Foodstuffs will be allowed to be sold from Iran, pistachios, carpets, other foodstuffs. I mean, those things will be able to be sold. So it's opening up some things, but not everything yet. The primary embargo still remains in place.
So the long-term trajectory is positive between the United States and Iran?
The long-term trajectory has the possibility of being positive, providing Congress passes this and providing the Majlis and the National Security Council accepts this and we implement it. If we implement this, then we are on a path to perhaps opening up a set of opportunities. If it is not implemented, we're going to have a lot of problems and perhaps even the possibility of conflict. And I find that very tragic, and I hope that we will succeed in persuading people why this agreement actually prevents conflict, provides for security for the region, and will prevent the acquisition of a nuclear weapon.
Mr. Secretary, thank you very much
for
accepting to do this interview.
My pleasure.
With us.
Thank you, sir.
Persian News Network, Satara Darishkesh, Monday, speaking with U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry at the State Department. This is VOA.
Here's Science in a Minute.
Climate scientists from UCLA and NASA's Jet Propulsion Laboratory have found that some of the heat generated by greenhouse gases have been trapped and held beneath the surface of the Pacific and Indian Oceans. The researchers suggest that this may explain the decade-long slowdown in the rise of global surface temperatures. They found that a layer located between 91 and 305 meters beneath the surface of the Pacific and Indian Oceans has been gathering more heat than previously observed. According to the researchers, movement of this warm subsurface ocean water has produced an unusually cooler surface, which in turn has also cooled the air temperature above. Scientists said that similar decade or longer breaks in the rise of Earth's average surface temperature also took place in the mid-1940s and the late 1970s. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
We just heard an extensive defense of the Iran nuclear deal from U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry, who wants to get that deal approved by U.S. lawmakers. Now we're going to take a brief look at what congressional critics of the deal are saying on social media. And Michael Lippin joins us for that. Michael, what have you found out?
Hey, Susan. Well, you know, one of the strongest critics of the deal in Congress is also one of the most powerful, and he is the Speaker of the House of Representatives, John Boehner. His Twitter handle is @SpeakerBoehner, and he used his Twitter account to send out a series of tweets on the Iran deal in the past few hours. Here's one of them. "We will fight this bad Iran deal that's wrong for our national security and wrong for our country." The House Speaker's tweets include links to his website, where you can find more extensive remarks from him on the Iran deal. In one of those quotes, Boehner says, "The deal paves the way for a nuclear Iran." And he says the president admitted that it will likely further Iran's support for terror activities throughout the Middle East. Well, you know, another powerful Republican in Congress is the Senate Foreign Affairs Committee Chairman, Bob Corker. He's on Twitter at SenBobCorker. And his latest Iran tweet from Monday says the Obama administration's attainment of a UN Security Council endorsement of the Iran deal before the U.S. Congress votes on it is contrary to the spirit of U.S. law. Susan?
Thanks for bringing us the other side of the story, Michael.
Sure.
Coming up on International Edition, a look at oil and gold prices and a singer who has made a big splash in Britain. The oil guru who predicted last year's slump in oil prices is predicting a return to $100 crude, and gold continues its slide. VOA's Alexis Christophorus joins us with the latest. Hi, Alexis.
Hi, Susan. Thank you. Yes, the famed oil analyst Gary Ross correctly predicted last year's rout in oil prices. He believes crude will reach $100 a barrel in the next 5 years, even with Iranian oil expected to start flooding the market later this year. Ross calls current oil prices of around $50 a barrel unsustainable. He adds that oil markets are not nearly as oversupplied as many believe, and that spare capacity is tight since Saudi Arabia is pumping all the crude it can without new drilling. And it is another rough day for gold investors. The precious metal sits near a five-year low, and analysts predict more selling ahead. It seems the list of reasons to be bearish on gold continues to grow. China didn't buy as much bullion as expected. The Federal Reserve may raise U.S. interest rates this year, and investors see less need for gold as a safe haven since Greece is working to stay in the euro. Analysts predict gold will fall another 5% by the end of this year to about $1,050 an ounce. Susan?
Thank you, Alexis.
Thank you.
You're tuned to VOA.
This is Green Bee for a healthier planet.
The bees at the Fairmont Waterfront Hotel are welcome guests. But unlike the other guests at this Vancouver resort, the bees didn't come to relax. They make honey and help pollinate the hotel's large herb garden. Bee butler Michael King is enthusiastic about his charges because of their capability to pollinate most of the world's agriculture.
Their ability to navigate, their ability to feed themselves, their ability to feed us as a result of what they do.
The Fairmont Waterfront Hotel is a green hotel certified by Green Key Global, an environmental group that specializes in the hotel industry. There is complimentary parking for electric vehicles, and guests are served the honey produced on site. The hotel also promotes sustainability with its rooftop garden, which helps save rainwater and insulates the interior of the building. The hotel says it's on a mission to be certified zero waste by the end of next year through reusing, repurposing, and recycling. I'm Rebecca Ward for VOA's Green Beat.
British singer Hannah Boleyn is about to release her first CD after making a splash in Britain. As International Edition's David Byrd tells us, Boleyn's CD, The Boleyn Affair, mixes emotional lyrics with a singer whose voice echoes other British stars, Adelaide and Amy Winehouse.
Wrap me up in your arms, read the future in my bones. Tell me if we'll work out. My body is riddled with doubt.
Hannah Boleyn says she is fond of music she calls cinematic soul. Think the theme from Goldfinger or The Spy Who Loved Me. Big arrangements, big voices, female voices that showcase big emotions. The 25-year-old from Leicestershire, England, started her first band when she was in elementary school. Obsessed with the Spice Girls, her favorite one being Posh Spice, also known as Victoria Beckham, she formed a girl group of her own and performed original material for her classmates. Boleyn left home at 16 to go to a musical theater school, but found she didn't want to do other people's music her whole life. As her career path came into sharper focus, Hannah decided to record as an independent artist, something that has made her rise to success tougher.
I've had lots of friends and family, when you tell someone you're a singer, and they go, oh, go on the X Factor. But for me, firstly, I love the writing process. That's a big part of it for me, and I want to have control of what I'm doing. And secondly, I don't think anyone would like me. So I wouldn't get any votes.
But she is getting noticed. After years of gigging with whoever would take her, Bolin has found success supporting artists, including James Morrison, Joan Armatrading, and Tinny Tempa. In working on her debut CD, Bolin worked with Ash Howes, who's worked with Ellie Goulding, One Direction, and Ollie Mers. She also worked with Paul Berry, the writer responsible for Cher's Believe, as well as hits for Rod Stewart, Enrique Iglesias, and others. But her single, Tough Love, is about how difficult it has been as an independent artist, particularly as a woman.
It has been, and continues to be, a massive challenge, but I'm really lucky that I'm now working with some incredible people, and you rely on those people to bring you back up when you're feeling down, and vice versa. So I feel like I'm getting there. Fingers crossed.
Many of Bolin's songs, including her first single, When You're Gone, are about romance, love, and relationships. She says she loves the emotion of music, so things that spark her emotions inspire many of her tunes.
I'm really influenced by relationships and trying to put a different spin on things as well, looking at things from someone else's perspective.
Tough Love is the second single from Bolin's debut CD, The Bolin Affair, which is scheduled for release from Tudor Gate Records in October. I'm David Byrd.
To invite you to follow us on Twitter. You can find us at @VOA_IE. If you would like to listen to today's program again or any previous broadcast, please visit our website at voanews.com. Go to the Programs tab in the upper right-hand corner and scroll down to International Edition. Thanks for joining us.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Mozambique took a welcome and public stand against wildlife trafficking this month by destroying 2.4 tons of elephant ivory and 86 pieces of rhino horn, weighing more than 420 pounds. U.S. Embassy staff were among those present at the event and issued a statement applauding the bold action by the government of Mozambique in the destruction of confiscated stockpiles. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service also issued a statement on July 10th, adding, "We are hopeful that this signifies a renewed commitment to combat poaching and wildlife trafficking." Mozambique represents the 10th country to engage in destruction of confiscated illegal ivory since the service held its first ivory crush in November 2013. Rampant poaching is taking its toll within Mozambique and on neighboring countries. Mozambique has lost 48% of its elephants in just the past 5 years. Recent surveys revealed that there are only 10,300 elephants left in the country. To the west of Mozambique, rhino poaching in South Africa skyrocketed from 7 rhinos poached in 2000 to 1,215 rhinos poached in 2014. Poaching also affects the rangers who put their lives on the line to defend these magnificent animals. Mozambique has experienced a number of significant thefts of seized ivory and rhino horn, and the United States recognizes the merit of destroying this stockpile, not only to signal how seriously Mozambique is taking this issue, but also to prevent any potential reentry of these confiscated items into illegal trade. The government of Mozambique's decision to publicly destroy their confiscated ivory and rhino horn sends a clear message that poaching and wildlife trafficking will no longer be tolerated. The United States is committed to working with its partner, Mozambique, to stop a trade which threatens rhinos and elephants with extinction.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. For a transcript of this and other VOA editorials, or to receive editorials by email, visit the VOA Editorials Internet homepage at www.voanews.com/editorials.